The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, underwritten in part by Green Mountain Power, CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, Let's Grow Kids by Concept 2, The Alchemist, UVM Medical Center, as well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. If you watch a newscast today, listen to the radio, or a podcast, then you are benefiting from the work of Lowell Thomas. In the 1930s, Lowell Thomas was arguably more famous than any American journalist has ever been. He dominated both network radio news and the newsreels shown in movie theaters back when they represented the only chance that a national audience had to hear or see rather than just read the news. Lowell Thomas was an adventurer who took American audiences with him on the radio and in the newsreels. He helped establish personality-driven journalism and reported earlier than any of his colleagues from around the world. During World War I, Thomas traveled to the Middle East and discovered T.E. Lawrence, the man who he turned into the celebrity Lawrence of Arabia. Lowell Thomas became a role model for foreign correspondents, and he was kind of an Indiana Jones of journalism, crashing planes, falling from horses, staring down rifles, but always coming back with the story. And through it all, Lowell Thomas was educating the country about the world, especially right before the Second World War. After the war, he slipped into Tibet, where he interviewed the Dalai Lama just before the Chinese invaded. And finally, his enterprising zeal led him to found Capital Cities, which eventually bought ABC before being sold itself to Disney for $17 billion. Well, this story ties into our story via Huntington resident and filmmaker Rick Moulton. Rick has been documenting many things, as known to many, for his ski history films, including a award-winning film called Legends of American Skiing. But Rick Moulton recently returned from a trip through Asia retracing the footsteps of Lowell Thomas. Rick, welcome to the conversation.
Hey, it's good to be on your show, David.
So first, let me just ask, what inspired your fascination with Lowell Thomas?
Well, actually, while making Legends of American Skiing, which Lowell Thomas was a part of, I was down filming Tony Matt, who was actually Lowell's groundskeeper. Lowell had given him a position and a house in his gatehouse of his estate, and Lowell brought us down there and kind of conducted the interview when we were interviewing Tony. And then when we woke up in the motel there in Pauline, New York, the next morning, Lowell Thomas had died. So I was actually with him on the day that he died in 1981. And ever since that time, I've sort of carried the candle, if you will, to make a film about Lowell Thomas, and been really chasing information about Lowell and his various archives ever since. So I guess that's the genesis of why I got into making a film about Lowell.
About Lowell Thomas. And Tony Matt, who you were interviewing, was known to many in the world of skiing and ski history as the man with the fastest recorded time to this day of skiing from the top of Mount Washington to the bottom in a storied race called the American Inferno. So I did not know that Tony Matt later ended up as the groundskeeper for Lowell Thomas. But Lowell Thomas also had a connection to the world of skiing. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, and we could say to Vermont, he used to, as you pointed out, do his broadcasts from remote locations, and he was an avid skier, starting first really at Lake Placid, where he could take a train right from New York City to Lake Placid. That was very convenient for him in the late 20s. And when Stowe really became an important skiing center, before there were even lifts there, after the CCC cut the Ranch Camp Trails and the nosedive, Lowell would go up and stay at the Green Mountain Inn, and then he would get a direct line to New York City so he could do his broadcast, his daily broadcast, from the basement right there in the whip. And there are pictures of Lowell with some of the notables of Stowe surrounding him while he was broadcasting from Stowe. And, of course, by putting Stowe front and center, here I am in Stowe, Vermont at the whip, it really publicized the town and you know, helped it take off. He was also an investor in the original single chair that went in 1940. And so he was a big part of ski developments really across the country, but in Stowe in particular.
And what was this daily show that he broadcast from the Green Mountain Inn?
Lowell always had a news slot. Actually, he did the first broadcast news in America, national news, and he started that in 1930, and he bought his time on the networks and then got his own sponsors. And that was very unique, but he was, you know, pioneering the whole thing. So he was buying time on both networks. There were only two networks at the time, NBC and CBS, and he bought time on both of them and then broadcast his news broadcast on both stations. He had no competition for a couple of years. Nobody else was doing broadcast news. And Lowell really, I think, had this time slot of 6:45, quarter of seven, and at 7 o'clock, Amos and Andy came on, and Lowell always laughingly said he was so famous because he was the show that came just before Amos and Andy, so people would tune in and catch him while they were getting ready for the most famous show on radio, and I'd say Amos and Andy was so famous that movie theaters, in order to get an audience, would actually have the radio on the stage, and they would play the Amos and Andy show before the movie started.
All right, so talk about, we're talking with filmmaker Rick Moulton about his recent trip to Asia in search of in the footsteps of Lowell Thomas. So talk about this trip that Lowell Thomas made to Asia that you set out in search of.
Well, Lowell was always trying to go to the four corners of the world. He wanted to go to the most forbidden place. He wanted to go where no one else had been. So, you know, he was one of the first Westerners into Afghanistan after his discovery of Lawrence. He went in and had filmed in Burma and China and New Guinea and all kinds of places, but he had never been to Tibet, and he had tried for 30 years to get a permission from the Tibetan government to come in and film there. Well, all of a sudden he got a telegram saying that they would really love to have him come. There was one catch: he could only bring family members. Luckily, he had his son was a great cameraman, and he was able to bring Lowell Jr. along with him. And to go into Tibet in this was 1949, and to do this in 1949 meant taking a caravan or going in by small horse or donkey all the way to Lhasa from India, and so it was something close to 25-day trek to get in there, and in Tibet in those days, there were no wheels allowed to touch the ground. So no wagons, certainly no vehicles of any kind on their roads, which were very primitive, really made for horse or animal travel.
So you said no wheels were allowed in Tibet? Why is that?
Well, it had to do with Tibetan Buddhism and a feeling that the wheels created disharmony by rolling. Now, certainly they had prayer wheels to send, you know, prayers to Buddha in an efficient way, but no wheels were allowed to roll on the ground. And
So this was a society in which there was, you couldn't have carts and anything like that?
Anything like that. Everything had to be carried on animals or on your back. And you had to walk or walk with the animals. And so, or ride the animals. And so, you're talking about, for the Chinese who were poised on the border at this time, and the reason that they contacted Lowell Thomas and finally allowed him into the country was because they knew the Chinese were massed on their border. And in fact, as Lowell is approaching Lhasa, he sees the Chinese diplomats being sent out of the country because they realized that a state of war was about to exist. So they were trying to gain publicity for their plight. And remember, this is in a time really where remote broadcast meant running a wire. And Lowell does the very first battery-powered remote broadcast, taking Delco batteries up to the Himalayas. And they had the first tape machine, and the tapes actually had to be hand-carried back to India after they were recorded as they went. And so they were sending runners down with the tapes to get them back to America. So there was about a four-day delay, or no, I guess it was more like a week delay to get the broadcasts back. But, you know, the real hope was that the world would care so much about this country losing its independence to China that something could be done. But unfortunately, this was right at the time that the Korean War is breaking out. And although they hand-carried a scroll from the Dalai Lama to Truman, or at least Lowell Jr. did, you know, there was nothing America could do about it.
So you traveled to Asia to retrace his trip. Tell us a little bit about how it began and where you started.
Well, of course, in 1949... organizing to go on this trip and taking this heavy equipment with them and so forth, they had somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 pack animals, and they set out from Sikkim, a small country at that time north of India, on the Tibetan border, and then went through Sikkim over the top of a pass into Tibet, and then across Tibet to Lhasa. And we wanted to retrace as much as we could Lowell's trip. And for the documentary, we have Lowell's films and still pictures and diaries. So we know what his route was. And we were curious to see how that route survives today and how much difference there really is. And it was our goal to follow in his footsteps, but you can't go from Sikkim into Tibet any longer because a state of antagonism exists between India and the Chinese and Tibet, so Chinese Tibet. So what we knew we'd have to do is go up to that mountain pass and backtrack around through Nepal, go from Nepal to Lhasa, and then from Lhasa up to that pass so we could complete the link or journey. But we wouldn't be able to pass over it into China. So 2 weeks before we left, the Chinese notified us that they were closing the country for 2 weeks, and it just happened to fall during our time there, and so they were going to cut off a week of our trip. And we were planning to do it in the order that, you know, of going up through Sikkim, and that would help us acclimate to the altitude, and then go around through Nepal to Lhasa and up to that border. But we had to reverse the order in order to, you know, be able to spend our full trip in Tibet. And so we went right to, you know, Lhasa's 12.5 altitude, 12,500 feet, and then through the course of our journey up to the top of that pass. We got up to about 18.5. So no one had a real adverse effect to the altitude. I had a pretty good crew with me. So we weren't, I wasn't just doing this alone. I had David Wright, who's a world-renowned traveling cinematographer, and Jo Keller, who's a great, she's a great photographer from Alaska, Ann Thomas Donahue, who is Lowell Thomas's granddaughter, and the film's writer, who is a journalist professor from NYU, Mitch Steffens, who's writing the biography on Lowell Thomas. And then we had a marvelous fixer, guy who organizes things, Jakob Uber, who is actually a resident of Dharamsala and speaks fluent Tibetan and Punjab, and was just really, he has been to Tibet just many, many, many times over the last 30 years and just had real connections in Tibet. And really made everything go smoothly. So
you fly into Lhasa, the capital of Tibet. And first of all, this idea that the Chinese were closing the country, meaning the country of Tibet?
Yes, to all foreigners, and including Chinese. So all tourists were just evacuated from the country.
Why did they do that?
They are installing a new Dalai Lama, if you will. You know, they have announced they have this incarnate, Buddha incarnate of their own choosing, and there was a ceremony to elevate him, and they didn't want any foreign press, and they didn't want any demonstrations or coverage of demonstrations that might occur from the indigenous Tibetans.
So you're going from Lhasa then, and were you traveling, how were you traveling to, so you're going to the border with Sikkim through Tibet, is that correct?
That's right. That was our plan. We did get, I guess you would say we were held by the Chinese as we had permits to get within about 40 kilometers of the top of the pass, but when we were about 200 kilometers from that location, we were detained by the Chinese, and that was a touchy moment. We had not gone public or tried to get a filming commercial visa. We were there as tourists, and we were doing it under the radar. We were advised that was the best way to go. And so when we were detained, it was a little nerve-wracking that, they might get our footage or find out what we were really up to. And we were just really lucky that, all that happened after about being held for about 4 or 5 hours was they sent us back the way we had come.
And what did you see along the way, and how did it compare to Lowell Thomas's trip in that same area?
Well, one of the big things, of course, is that during the Cultural Revolution, hundreds of monasteries were destroyed. And it's hard to imagine someone, just ripping apart buildings that are 1,000 years old and have, 8-foot walls and tearing them down. We saw ruins of buildings that had been totally destroyed in the 70s. And what I can say that the Chinese have taken a total positive attitude towards the monasteries now. There are under Chinese, I guess you'd say, supervision. There are monks in the monasteries that survived, where there might have been several hundred monks. There's now maybe 20 or something like that. So it's not, anywhere near a theocracy that it was when Thomas, you know, found it. At the Summer Palace, for example, where he actually filmed the Dalai Lama, who was only 14 years old at the time. I mean, there were 1,500 monks at that time. And I think there's something like 60 there now in that sprawling complex. And in part, it's there for tourism. You know, they're trying to encourage people to look at the marvelous artifacts that have survived. I mean, some of the Buddha statues are weigh many tons and are made out of solid gold. There are incredible things to see. We went to, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 monasteries that have survived that Thomas had stopped at along the way. We found his old stone roads that were in existence that have been well bypassed by the modern roads that the Chinese have built since. Some areas, one area outside the pass, for example, had been totally dammed, and so a giant lake was sort of in the path of where Thomas had journeyed. And I should mention that Thomas, on the way out, on the third day from Lhasa, headed back towards Sikkim, was thrown from his horse and shattered his hip in 8 places. And, of course, at the time, they didn't know the extent of his injury. He was just, you know, really in pain and couldn't move. And his son managed to get him the 23-day trek back to India. They were able to get some morphine for him sent through, which caught up with him, but they were carrying him in a sedan chair that they built. So you can just imagine what a painful exit it was for Lowell Thomas, and he was really lucky to have survived it.
Wow. So what became of his, what did he do with this material that he gathered in Tibet from that trip?
Well, there's a wonderful book, Out of This World, that is written by his son, Lowell Jr., and then they had a movie, Out of This World, which was shown on CBS and was also taken around by Lowell Jr. as a lecture film all over the country. And they really did publicize, I think, Tibet, the Dalai Lama. I think that both the Thomases were very involved with the Free Tibet Movement. Lowell Jr. was given the Guiding Light Award about 10 years ago. And, you know, they have carried the torch, if you will. And we just interviewed His Holiness in Dharamsala about 2 weeks ago. So that was, we've been after that moment, and we finally have that for our documentary.
And when will your documentary be complete?
Well, that's a good question. If I keep adding interviews like this one of His Holiness, it is going to keep pushing out our finished film. But I would say comfortably we should be... have something and do our premiere next summer.
And finally, what insight did this trip give you into the person behind the who Lowell Thomas was?
Well, I mean, I think he had incredible fortitude to have made that journey when he was in his 50s and not the young man he was when he went to Aqaba and filmed Lawrence, certainly, when he was 24 or something. So, you know, just his incredible sense of adventure and purpose and those things came through. Seeing his film and really studying his film and then being in that landscape and seeing it ourselves, I mean, it really comes across how he captured so much of these people. I think that the other thing that we're really coming to understand is what a role he played in giving this country a common sense of the world. It was a time when there were few news outlets, and this was Lowell Thomas's newscast when they were going out on the radio, and Lowell Thomas's news reels, which he was also producing and narrating.
Okay, well, Rick, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking with Rick Moulton, the filmmaker who is documenting the life of Lowell Thomas. Rick Moulton, thanks for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
And that does it for this week's show. We'll be back next week at 1 for another Vermont Conversation.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility has presented the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. The special feature from VBSR is underwritten in part by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. By CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg. Proud to support nonprofit groups such as Local Motion, Vermont's statewide nonprofit advocate for walkable and bikeable communities. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy transformation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. As well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org.